the summer, and then 2 years later we have the winter, and then 2 years later we have the summer again. Well, I have a lot of admiration for a group of athletes at the Olympics, the Summer Olympics, that maybe you do as well, and that is, let's see here, see if I can get my slide going. All right, give me the first slide, would you? Yeah, let's see if I can try that now. Yes, there we go. That was too far. Okay. I am super impressed with gymnasts. Gymnasts are amazing. You may recognize some of the faces, especially on the left-hand side from the last Olympics. Pretty amazing what they can do. And I don't know about you, but I've always been super jealous of Olympic athletes when they get their gold or silver medal or bronze medal standing up on that stage. I'm looking at them like, I want to be them. I want that. I want that gold medal. But here's the thing. You really don't want that gold medal. You really don't want that silver medal. You really don't want that bronze medal. I know you don't. How do I know this? Because you don't see the preparation that goes into winning a gold, silver, or bronze medal. You don't see that. You don't see somebody in the gym working out, straining all of their muscles. You don't see little girls getting stretched beyond all capacity, becoming a human pretzel for the sake of winning a gold and silver. You don't see that, dude. You don't want to do that. Trust me. That's a lot of work. The work that you need to do in order to be successful as an athlete, especially at the Olympics, is a significant amount. And I think if you were to talk to any gymnast, particularly probably any athlete at all on a professional level, and you say to them, what does it take? They'll say something like this. If you want to be successful at any significant task, then you've got to take the proper amount of time to get ready. You don't just start competing in the Olympics with no preparation. You don't just dive in. Once you know what you're chasing for, you must prepare yourself in order to be successful. It just makes sense. Now, this is also true, by the way, about the concept of reaching out to people with the love of God. The last couple of weeks, we've talked about a couple of big ideas. The first big idea is that lost people matter a great deal to God, maybe more than we've given it credit in the past. And last week we talked about this big idea that lost people matter to God, and we are the perfect people to be a part of sharing that good news, just reaching out to those people. We are perfectly equipped. We used to be lost too, so we can relate to them. We know how great it is to be found, so we can persuade them. And we show the evidence of God's handiwork in our transformed lives, and so we can attract people. We're the perfect choices to get involved in this process of just reaching out. But here's a reality we all have to face. Before we just decide to dive into this, to just dive in and start reaching out and start making those contacts and talking to people, we need to take a minute to look in the mirror and ask ourselves if we have properly prepared ourselves to be successful in reaching out to people. Because there's nothing more discouraging than getting excited after watching an inspiring, maybe you watch the Olympics and you look a little bit like me and you're sitting on your couch. It's really discouraging to say, you know what, tomorrow's the new day. I'm going to become a world-class Olympic athlete. And you get up out of bed the next day and you go to the gym and you realize, I can't even sit up straight, let alone do that thing that guy was doing. Like if I was just laying on top of blocks, I wouldn't be able to do that. I'm not ready. I'm not prepared. There's nothing more discouraging than trying something before you're ready. So the question we need to ask ourselves this morning, or that we're going to, whether you want to or not, we're going to ask ourselves this morning is, how do we get ready? How do we prepare for this process of reaching out? As always, Jesus comes to our rescue here by sharing with us some key tips, I think. Three main things that we need to do in order to get ready to reach out to the people around us that God wants us to reach out to. And in order to see those things, we need to open our Bibles to the book of Matthew chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9. I would encourage you, if you didn't bring a copy of the Bible with you today, there's lots of extras in the seats in front of you. Please grab one of those and turn to page 814, please. Page 814. As Jesus often does, he's going to show us here in this passage the way forward, the ways that we need to prepare ourselves to effectively reach people around us. Now, before I dive into these verses, Matthew chapter 9 on page 814, I want to remind you of something. The story that we're about to read, it happened early on in Jesus' ministry. In other words, Jesus was a carpenter for about 30 years, just kind of a normal guy living his life, doing his thing, working with his father, and then probably taking over the family business, working with his brothers. And then at age 30, God called him into a preaching, teaching ministry to announce some good news, which is that God's kingdom was about to come in the form of him. And so he went out preaching and teaching, and as he did that, he would interact with people. In fact, take a look at Matthew chapter 9, verse 35, because this gives us kind of a summary of what Jesus did when he would travel around in his ministry. Verse 35, it says this, "And Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom and healing every disease and every affliction." Those were the hallmarks of what Jesus did. He would travel from place to place. He would teach in their synagogues, but then he would also proclaim the good news just wherever he was. In fact, most of the teachings of Jesus we have preserved for us didn't happen in church. They happened out in the fields, out in the world, on the streets. It's almost as if to say that Christianity was meant to be more out there than it is to be in here. And Jesus was out there talking, sharing with people. And when there were sick people, he would heal them. God gave him the power to heal. It was an amazing, amazing experience. Now, there was one constant in all of these different activities. And the constant we find in the very first phrase of verse 36. You ready for this? Verse 36 says this. When he, that's Jesus, saw what? The crowds. You know what the constant in all of Jesus traveling around and talking and preaching and all that stuff? The one constant for Jesus was people. Now, this is an introvert's nightmare, isn't it? Everywhere you go, people. No matter what you're doing, people. And not just a few people. Not just like me and a couple of buddies, me and a few friends. Me and several thousand of my closest friends all together at once, constantly barraging him with questions, asking him questions, listening to him, wanting his help, needing to be healed. People, people, people everywhere. I looked it up. There were 124 times in the four authorized biographies of Jesus' life called the Gospels, 124 times it talks about crowds. Jesus was not somebody who was just a one-on-one kind of a guy. He was a large group of people everywhere. In fact, I want to show you a sample of what I'm talking about from the book of Mark. I'll get it on the screen up here. It says, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea. All the introverts say amen. And a great crowd followed him. So I want you to picture Jesus running away, in a sense, from people, and the people are so compelled by him, they follow him from Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem and Idumea and from beyond the Jordan and from around Tyre and Sidon. You probably don't recognize a lot of those names. Let me just say it means everywhere. They came out of the woodwork and they're chasing after him. Now look at this. When the great crowd heard all that he was doing, they came to him. And he told his disciples to have a boat ready for him because of the crowd, lest they, what? Crush him. For he had healed many so that all who had diseases pressed around him to touch them. Jesus was around people. Now this must have been tough. Wouldn't you have liked to have not been in a situation where you're worried about being crushed by the people who want to come talk to you and deal with you and learn from you and be healed by you? But what blows me away about Jesus is that Jesus didn't avoid the crowds. He chose to make himself accessible to them. He was where the people were. In fact, whenever you picture Jesus in these stories, I want you to picture him surrounded by a cornucopia of people. All different kinds, all different sizes, all different shapes, all different income levels, all different races, everybody surrounding Jesus Christ. Now, this leads me to the first way I think we need to prepare ourselves or get ready to reach out to lost people. Number one is this: we need to engage the people around us. Engage the people that are around us. Now, friends, there is a reality that you have to deal with as well. There are people around you every day. Now, I understand the reality that many times we feel like there's a lot of people, but nobody knows us, so we still feel lonely. And social media doesn't help. Sometimes it makes it worse. But the reality is, if you just think about it logically, there are people around you every single day. Now, I know for a fact you don't know a lot of them. You don't have friendships with a lot of them. You haven't had conversations with a lot of them. But there are people around you every single day, whether it's at work, even in your neighborhood, going to the store, interacting with school and different environments, there are people. The question is this: are we going to engage those people, or are we going to do everything we can to isolate ourselves from them? That is the big question we have to wrestle with every day. In fact, whether you think about it or not, you're going to have to make a decision on that. Because there's people around. What are we going to do? Are we going to engage or are we going to isolate? Jesus, you may have noticed in this passage, did not wait for the crowds to come and find him, in the sense that he didn't set up shop in the synagogue and say, anytime you folks want to come to Jesus, come to church and I'll be here waiting for you. He didn't say that. Jesus was the one who got close to people. He didn't keep a safe distance away from them. He was right in their faces, just as they were in his. He was accessible. Now, other people in his day, other religious teachers, had a slightly different approach. Let me give you an illustration of that here from the book of Luke. Now, this is Jesus, right? It says, now he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. So, of course, he went to church. He's a good, upstanding Jewish man. And he says, and behold, there was a woman who had had a disabling spirit for 18 years. Now, 18 years, that's a lot of years. She was bent over and could not fully straighten herself. A cripple. And this is what Jesus did. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said to her, woman, you are freed from your disability. And he laid his hands on her. How close did he get? He could have used a word. He could have said, ew, you're healed. But instead, he chose to walk up to this woman, place his hands on her, and it says immediately she was made straight and she glorified God. Jesus was accessible to the people. He was where the people were. He didn't isolate himself from people. He was right there. But there was somebody else in the room. The ruler of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, said to the people, there are 6 days in which work must be done. Come on those days and be healed, and not on the Sabbath day. Now, if you want, we can argue about whether or not you ought to show respect to the Sabbath day and not do the work and blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to get into that debate. What I want to point out is his mindset. Here's a woman who is crippled with a debilitating disease for 18 years. She's in suffering, agony, and pain. Jesus' reaction is to get close, do something, help this woman. His reaction is come back on a day that it's not so inconvenient. Why don't you show up? There's 6 days when we can get stuff like this done. Don't bother me today. I'm doing my Jesus thing. I'm doing my church thing. I'm doing my worshiping God thing. I can't be bothered with you people today. He kept his distance. Now, Jesus will have none of this. Notice this. It says, then the Lord answered him, you hypocrites. Does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to water it? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day? Jesus is like, what is your problem? What are you looking at? You're looking at the day, and I'm looking at the people who are here today. I'm looking at their needs. I'm close. I'm engaging. Why are you sending them away to come back another day when it's more convenient? Jesus waded right into it. He didn't ignore this woman. He didn't try to brush her off. He came close to her, laid his hands on her, and he got involved. And the question I have to ask myself, and because I get to talk for a living, I have to ask you is this. Which character in the story do you most resemble? Do you look at people around you and say, I got to get close. I got to engage. Or are you like the rule of the synagogue saying, no, that's not for me. I need to keep my hands clean. I'm going to isolate myself. Come back some other day when it's more convenient. Which do you resemble? Which do I resemble? And it really boils down to this question that goes back a couple of weeks. Are we more afraid of losing a precious sheep than we're afraid of being contaminated or disrupted or getting messy because of those sheep that need to be found? The truth is, friends, as Christians and followers of Jesus Christ, we cannot avoid immoral people for fear of contamination. We just can't do it. It's not an option for us. Let me show you what I mean. Paul was talking to a group of people who lived in a wild city. I mean, you want to talk about wild? Ron, this was Vegas in the first century, okay? Corinth was a bad place. You went there when you wanted to have a good time, and what happened in Corinth, you left in Corinth. And Paul's talking to these group of people, and he says this, I wrote you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people. And then he goes this, but wait a minute. I didn't at all mean the sexually immoral of this world or the greedy and the swindlers or the idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world. He's like, I told you not to hang out with sexually immoral people, but that's not what I meant. I didn't mean avoid lost people who are sexually immoral. I didn't tell you to avoid the lost people who are greedy, the lost people who are swindlers or idolaters. I don't want you to go out from the world. I don't want you to form your own little disconnected, isolated, safe community where nobody can ever contaminate us with their badness. That's not what I'm trying to do here. It's not what Paul intended. Instead, he says this, I am writing to you not to associate with anyone who bears the name of brother if he is guilty of sexual immorality or greed or is an idolater, reviler, drunkard, or swindler, not even to eat with such a one. He says, for what have I to do with judging outsiders? Is it not those inside the church whom you are to judge? God judges those outside. Now, I want you to let the implications of that wash over you for a second. Who deserves our most stinging critiques? We deserve them. It's us. We turn the mirror on ourselves before we stick a finger in the faces of people outside who don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ. Why aren't we as skilled at turning the finger on ourselves than we are on the world out there? I'll tell you why. Because it's more convenient for us not to. It's easier. It's safer. I don't have to be uncomfortable around a swindler. I don't have to figure out how in the world am I supposed to love this greedy person? How do I try to stand up for God's standards with this sexually immoral person? We don't want to wrestle with those questions. We'd rather isolate. And then we give ourselves a free pass within the church. We'll tolerate behavior here, but we'll criticize it out there. Paul says that is unacceptable. You cannot isolate yourself from people out there. You are sent to those people. We're here for them. If we create this cuddly little safe environment where we never interact with anybody who's lost, we go to this school and all the Christians are there. We go to this workplace and oh, thank goodness there's a Christian boss there and there's other Christians I work with. I want a Christian plumber. Don't give me a plumber. I want a Christian plumber. Because I don't know if I can trust those swindlers out there. Now, I'm being silly, right? But we have to recognize this tendency we have to isolate ourselves from the people who need us. And I understand it's risky, okay? Because when you interact with darkness, sometimes it tugs at your heart and you want some of what it is. And you got to fight against those urges to get lost in that dark lifestyle. I get it. And some of you come out of a dark past, and jumping back into that world could be a way for you to slide back in ways you don't want to slide back. I'm not saying we don't put protections in our lives. I'm saying the mindset of isolation cannot exist. If you got to be careful and protect yourself and only venture out with certain protections in place, so be it. That's the way God intends for it. But for you to just categorically say, you know what, I'm just going to stay where it's safe with all the Christians and not go out there, then we have a problem. It doesn't fit. And you'll never be effective reaching out to people if you never spend time with them, if you're not around them. If you have to like do mental and physical gymnastics just to get within the proximity of somebody who is lost, you'll never learn how to reach out to them. Part of what God has done for us that is awesome is he's placed us in a world with people all around us who need him. It can become natural to interact, to love, to reach out. So first of all, we need to engage, wade in. Don't stay on the sidelines. Don't isolate. Don't pretend like, you know, you're better and so I'm scared of them. No. Dive in there. Get started. Wade in. Second way to get ready. Notice our text, verse 36. Matthew 9, 36. It says this, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. I want to call your attention to the very first phrase there. When he what? What does it say? Saw the crowds. Second thing I want to suggest, the second way we need to get ready for this process of reaching out, we need to learn to see the needs of the people around us. You notice when Jesus got close to these people, he actually took the time to see them. And he didn't just see their externals, he saw what they were like on the inside. Now, how do we know that? How do we know what they were like on the inside? Because Matthew tells us they were like sheep without a shepherd. They were harassed and helpless. I doubt they had a billboard or a little sign on their chest that says, "Hi, Jesus, I'm harassed and helpless. I'm like a sheep with no shepherd." He looked at them and he could see the needs in them, even without them broadcasting it or even without them saying it. He could look at them and diagnose their need of him. And what do they need more than anything else? They needed a shepherd. And Jesus had the heart of the great shepherd. And so when he saw people in need of a shepherd, his heart went out to them. But the key thing I want you to notice is Jesus looked past the surface of people and he saw their needs. Now, we struggle with this because we look at people's surfaces all the time. And we're either impressed by it, wow, that's amazing, you're really cool. Or we're distressed by it, like, ew, what's your deal? Why can't you stay in a relationship? Why can't you keep a job? Why can't you, We get impressed by the outsides, we get distressed by the outsides. But the reality is, seeing requires not being impressed or distressed. It requires us looking long enough to see past the exterior into the needs in people's hearts. And I struggle with this because I'm too self-preoccupied to even notice them. I just kind of live my life. I wander around. I do what I do. I pay my bills. I go to work. I try to have some free time. I try to spend time with my family. And I don't make any room for seeing people. In fact, I bump into people all the time and I don't even notice them because I'm so self-preoccupied. It's my life, it's my world. And don't say you're too busy. You're too self-preoccupied. Everybody's busy. Jesus was busy, very busy, but he wasn't self-preoccupied. He was others preoccupied. So we're self-preoccupied. Sometimes we're just so disgusted by what we see in people on the surface that we don't see the need underneath it. We forget something, that every hideous, horrible, awful sin that has ever been committed was committed because that person thought they were trying to fill a need in their life by doing that. And if we can learn to look past what they did with that need, it'll help us to see their deep needs in their heart. And the cover isn't always going to tell you what that need is. So don't settle for what's on the surface with the people. Some people lead with how annoying they are. They don't restrain their mouth. They just let fly whatever they think. I worked with people like that. And every time I see them, some sarcastic, mean, insulting comment before I even got a chance to say hello. And I'm tempted to look at them and go, that's the annoying jerk. I'm going to avoid him, and I'll spend my time with other people who deserve it. Jesus didn't look at that. He looked at that kind of a person, looked past the annoyance and realized there's a deep need in this guy's heart that he's responding to by doing this annoying thing. If you ever want to be somebody who's effective at reaching out to lost people, you've got to learn to see their needs. You got to go beyond the surface. You got to do what Jesus did. One last thing here in our text. Go back to verse 36. When Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Did you notice how Jesus responded when he saw the crowds? What does it say there? He had compassion for them. Now, that's a really interesting Greek word. Had compassion is, you could translate it, got twisted up in his guts. Have you ever had that feeling? Like, usually it's not a happy feeling. It's usually I'm really worried about somebody. It's I'm really concerned, and you feel that anxiety just churning in your stomach. Somebody's going in for a surgery, and you can't do anything except sit and wait and pray, and your stomach just does that. You look at your kids and you wonder how they're doing and you hear a bad report and you're like, oh, that's what Jesus was talking about here. His stomach was tied up in knots. He felt their need all the way in his gut. Now this happened to Jesus all the time. Let me just give you a quick sampling of some of these. Look at this. This is a different time in Matthew 14. It says, when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd. Shocker, it's Jesus, right? He saw a great crowd. He had compassion on them. And what did it cause him to do? Healed their sick. He had this feeling, this gut, and he moved to try to meet their needs. Take a look at this next one. And behold, there were two blind men sitting by the roadside. And when they heard that Jesus was passing by, they cried out, Lord, have mercy on us, son of David. Now look at the crowds. Crowd rebuked them, telling them to be silent, but they wouldn't be silent. They cried out all the more, Lord, have mercy on us, son of David! And stopping, Jesus called them and said, what do you want me to do for you? Some of the questions Jesus asked are hilarious. That's one of them for me. What do you want me to do? I don't know. He says this, they said to him, Lord, let our eyes be opened. And Jesus, and it's the same Greek word, in pity, touched their eyes, and immediately they recovered their sight, and they followed him. He felt something, and that feeling compelled him to take action. Touched their eyes, and they could see. There was another time, a leper came to him, imploring him, and kneeling, said to him, if you will, in other words, if you want to, Jesus, you can make me clean. Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched a leper, and said to him, I am willing, be clean. And then there's another time. This story, most people don't know this story, it's in the Bible. As Jesus drew near to the gate of the town, behold, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and a considerable crowd from the town was with her. There's that word again, crowd. And when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, do not weep. And then Jesus did probably the most inappropriate thing ever anybody's ever done at a funeral. He came up and he touched the bier, or bier, I don't know how to pronounce that word, and the bearers stood still. And he said, young man, I say to you, arise. And the dead man sat up and began to speak. And Jesus gave him to his mother. Jesus saw needs and it did something to his stomach. And when it did something to his stomach, it led to him taking action. Friends, if we want to be successful in this process, we have got to learn, number three, this is the last one, we're almost done. Hang in there, you're almost there, you're almost at the finish line, you can see it from here. Number three is this, open your heart to the people around you. Open your heart. Now, in 21st century America, this is probably the hardest one of the three. It's the hardest one of the three because we find it really, really hard to keep our hearts open for a lot of reasons. One reason is we get overwhelmed. Through Facebook, you have access to the needs of everyone in the world, and it can be overwhelming. And so instead of feeling all of that as it comes in, I just need to shut it off. I gotta turn it off. I gotta close my eyes. I gotta pretend like it's not there. Sometimes we close our hearts or don't open our hearts because we're just cynical. We've reached out and we've had our hands slapped away or cut off. And we're bitter about the fact that we tried and they didn't appreciate us. We got a little cynical. Or maybe we just look at people and we get judgmental, like, you don't deserve me to reach out to you anyway. You're only in that condition because of something you did. You made your bed, right? It's time to lie in it. The problem is when we do that, we allow our hearts to calcify. And we let it calcify because it just hurts less to live with a cold, calcified heart. And it demands a lot less from us to have a cold, calcified heart. And it makes us feel so much superior to the people around us. And I get that. The reason I came up with this list is I basically just looked in my own heart, and those are the three reasons I came up with. So I know what this is all about. But here's the reality, friends. If you have a cold, calcified heart, you'll never be effective in reaching out to people. Because they can tell. They can tell when you don't care. They can tell when you're just discharging a duty. Here you go, here's the good news of Jesus. And when you're doing it because you're moved to your gut by their needs. Jesus didn't close his heart. He kept his heart open. And I'll tell you what, it was painful for Jesus to keep his heart open. It inconvenienced Jesus to keep his heart open. It cost Jesus a whole lot. But he was absolutely unwilling to write people off. He just relentlessly cared for them. The thing that blows my mind about Jesus is that his heart was always open. And because his heart was always open, Jesus was always ready to spring into action. He was ready for his event at the Olympics. He was ready for the race to the finish line because he had prepared himself. He was close to people. He was near them. He engaged them. He waded in. He didn't stay where it was safe. He saw people's real needs. He cut through the outside and saw the deepest part of their hearts. And then his heart was moved. He kept his heart open, and it led him to reach out naturally. I would love for our church to get to the point, and I'm talking mostly about me, and you guys get to be a part of this too. I would love for our church to get to the point where I don't ever have to tell you to reach out to somebody. I don't have to tell you. You know what? There's visitors that show up every week, and some of them are wondering if anybody cares about them. I want to get to the point where I don't have to say, you know what? There's somebody who hasn't been to church for a few months, and they're lonely, and they feel like nobody cares about. I long for the day I don't even have to tell anybody, because your heart is so moved by what you see that you just instinctively, naturally do something about it. And I think that's what it can become. It doesn't have to be this weird, artificial thing that Toby makes you do. It could be something that just flows from your gut, literally, and leads you to reach out with the love of God. So as we close, just a couple of questions. They're printed in your notes. When was the last time you gave your heart an audit? In other words, when was the last time you checked to see if your heart was cold and calcified and distant? When was the last time? If today is the first time you're even thinking about it in a long time, I suggest you take some time this afternoon and ask yourself the tough questions about your own heart. Second thing, have you enlisted or asked for God's help in this process? I don't know about you. I don't know what to do about my heart sometimes. Like, I can see the problem and still have no idea what to do. And that's when I need a supernatural God to intervene and do crazy things in my heart that I don't know how to do. I remember one time I was in college and somebody came forward during a series like this and gave a testimony. He said, look, I have a cold heart and I don't know what to do about it. But I'm going to go home and I'm going to pray and I'm going to ask God to do something about my heart. Maybe you're in that spot. You're like, yeah, I got a cold heart. I'm cynical. I'm judgmental, or I'm just overwhelmed and I just shut people out. My heart's slammed shut. God, do something to my heart. Last question. Have you just started yet? Just get started. What are you waiting for? Let's hit the gym on this. Let's start to prepare. Let's practice tomorrow morning even, like, or even this afternoon. If you stop somewhere on the way home, you're around people. Just look at them a little bit. See them. Imagine what needs are in their hearts. And if you have an opportunity to extend a kindness, an opportunity to say a kind word, you would just wade into the middle of it. Say, you know what? I'm just gonna try something. I don't know. Might work, might not work. I don't care. I'm just gonna get involved. I'm gonna try something. Because friends, if we're willing to put in the time to prepare ourselves, we can be successful in this. We are perfectly positioned by God to make a difference. I don't care if you're in fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, or you've passed grades a long time ago. You are perfectly positioned if you're willing to prepare yourself. Let's pray. God, thank you for your love. Thank you for this challenge. I know my heart, Lord, can become so cold and so distant. I know that I isolate myself many times from people that I know are far from you. I know, Lord, that sometimes I see what's on the outside. I don't see their needs. And Father, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be somebody who says, all of you who have problems, come back when it's more convenient for me. I can't handle this right now. I want to be somebody who's right in the middle of everything, whose heart is open to them. And I want you to use me, God. And if you would humbly use me, I know you can humbly use all the other people in this room whose hearts resonate with what I'm saying. You can use us, God. You want to use us. You are so excited about using us. Please help us, God, to just get started, to just open up our hearts and see what you'll do with us. And I pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.